This is your AEW Dynamite review for January 29th, 2020, from WWE Hall of Famer Drew Carey's favorite city of Cleveland, Ohio. Right? Wasn't that in his theme song to the old Drew Carey show? It used to end with Ohio at the end. I've never been to Ohio before. I don't really see what the big deal is personally. Seems to always come down to Ohio or Florida in a lot of our elections. So I guess it's kind of an important state. The Twitter poll is open, by the way, for those of you who want to vote. Thumbs up, thumbs down on what you thought of the Dynamite show tonight. You can go to my Twitter at Solomonster, vote on the AEW poll. You can vote on the NXT poll. You can vote on both. I want to see if we can get to at least 350 likes on this video tonight. We'll make that the initial goal. So our goal is to get to 350 thumbs up on this video. So let's see if we can make that happen. And as always, Super Chats are open for those of you who wish to donate and support the show. As I mentioned on the last review, when we take phone calls and all that, as I open more lines to bring in more calls, all that stuff costs money. So the money is certainly going back into the show. So any Super Chats are always appreciated. $10 or more, Russo on a pole. Always love the Russo on a pole Super Chat. And just to knock out a few here, so I don't have to disrupt the review too much here before we get going, I do want to say thank you to Cameron Johnson, Psycho Jet Black, and Stephen Fowler. Stephen Fowler with the $15 Super Chat. Russo on a pole, bro. So let's get into this Dynamite show here. We are going to do something special when the Dynamite review is over, before any calls later. Those of you in the Facebook group know that we have our annual Royal Rumble pool. We set a new record this year. We had over 2,500 participants in the Facebook group. Something like 81 pools, I think, of people. And congratulations to all of the winners of the pools. I had number 26, which was Roman Reigns in the Men's Royal Rumble. I thought I had it in the bag. And then Drew McIntyre went and screwed all that up. So I did not win this year, but the way it works is all of the winners now go to the Ultimate Royal Rumble pool. And I figure, why not just pull the top three winners here live on the air? So at the conclusion of this review, I'm going to throw the big old wheel, the Wheel of Fun, up on the screen. Hopefully you'll be able to hear the sounds and all that. And we're going to pick the third, second, and first place winners live here on the air. Very exciting. But first, Jon Moxley, Ohio's own, was out to open the show tonight. He had his pirate eye patch on. And Moxley said, look, you know, I might have one good eye, and I might have to have another eye in the back of my head. I'm going to have to watch my back. He's got a month before he challenges Chris Jericho for the championship at Revolution. So they're going to have to come up with another 3 weeks after this of television. Actually, four, I guess, another 4 weeks of TV. Try to keep it interesting in the lead-up to this pay-per-view match here against Jericho. Jericho comes out. Crowd is singing along a little bit to his entrance music again. He says to Moxley, hey, I saw your mom backstage. And she looked fetching, he said. It's an interesting word. Said I might have to call her later. And Moxley, you know, in a situation like this, you would think Moxley would just take off down the aisle after this guy. This guy's talking about his mother. But he just stood there. He mean mugged it. Didn't flinch. Jericho calls out the Inner Circle. And they challenge Moxley to a 5-on-1 fight. Moxley is outnumbered. Then they bring out more guys. They claim that these are five street thugs recruited by Santana and Ortiz from, I guess, the mean streets of the Bronx in New York. So now it's 10-on-1. Ortiz was the first one down with an axe handle in his hand. Moxley headbutted him, dropped him with a paradigm shift. And Moxley laid out one of the other street thugs. Referee, security, whole bunch of people come in here to break it up. Moxley hightails it through the crowd. Yeah, I thought this was fine. I thought Jericho was entertaining. You know, on the whole, I should have mentioned this at the beginning. I didn't think it was a bad show, but it was definitely not one of their more exciting shows tonight. You know, they moved along some of the stories for the pay-per-view. You know, it served its purpose. But when the show was over, I just kind of felt like, all right, it's another week, another show. You know, whereas a few weeks ago, we had a couple of shows that they ended. I thought, hey, that's a really good show. I didn't have that same feeling tonight. But I thought the show overall was one that served its purpose to move things along. We had the Young Bucks against the Butcher and the Blade. JR, it's the Butcher. Who? Who is it? The Butcher. Have we seen him before in AEW? No. Look, it's the Blade. Who? Oh, that never gets old. That never gets old. That has to be one of the great moments of 2019. The Butcher and the Blade. Have we seen these men before on AEW television? No, we haven't. Hey, look, it's the Bunny. Oh, don't forget the Bunny. How could you not know the Butcher and the Blade and the Bunny? Come on, JR. Come on now. I think I finally figured it out, by the way, after tonight's vignette, which I'll talk about a little bit later. You know, but we saw the slaughterhouse where they work. I finally figured it out. I can only imagine that Excalibur, you know, he gets his meat. That's his butcher. He gets his meat from the butcher, and that's how he knew him. Anyway, speaking of which, I guess this would be the time to talk about it. MJF, they threw to a video before this match where he and Wardlow walk into an actual slaughterhouse. And he walks up to the bunny. The bunny has a like a giant machete in her hand, machete, and he hands her an envelope with the Young Bucks name scribbled on it. So basically, these guys are paid mercenaries here for MJF after the Bucks tried to drown him on the Jericho Cruise in the pool last week. But I love it. Like we learned here that the Butcher is an actual butcher. This is like 1995 WWE, you know, where every wrestler had a second job. We had a dentist, we had a garbage man, we had a plumber. Now we have a butcher. MJF sat in on commentary. He was very upset over the Young Bucks tossing him into the swimming pool last week. And he said, look, I can't swim. You know, they threaten my life. They try to kill me. He said, these guys, they call themselves good Christian boys. The only Bible verse they know is probably Austin 3:16, he said. And as soon as he said that, you could tell it took every fiber of Jim Ross's being to keep his cool and not start screaming Austin's name 5 times and shout the Texas Rattlesnake or the Bionic Redneck. He behaved himself, though. He was on his best behavior here. So Nick Jackson got tripped up on the apron by the Bunny. That gave Butcher and Blade the advantage. They worked over Nick for a little while. There was a doctor bomb in here by the Butcher for a near fall. So Matt gets the tag. He runs wild. Drop kick through the ropes to the Butcher. Top rope elbow onto the Blade for a near fall. Nick tags back in. They hit a senton, or he hits a senton for a two. Double super kicks to the Butcher. Bucks hit the Meltzer driver on the Blade for the win. Match was okay, you know. The problem is this. The more that these two guys lose, and we've seen the Butcher and the Blade lose quite a bit, the more we see these two guys lose, the harder it is to take them seriously. I don't care how big and mean the Butcher may look, he's got a great look. He looks like a blacksmith or something out of the 1800s, out of the Wild West. Big dude. But if they lose all the time, I don't exactly see what's so threatening about them. So Butcher and Blade attack the Bucks after the match. Kenny Omega runs down for the save, hits a V-trigger on Blade, and then bringing it up the rear, taking his sweet time coming down the aisle. Here comes Hangman Page. Here comes Hangman Page. He's got a beer in his hand, already half empty. Or is it half full? I guess it depends on your perspective. He hands the beer to Matt Jackson. Literally a hold my beer moment. And then he hits a slingshot lariat into the ring on, I think it was the Butcher. And then he collects his beer, drinks the rest of it, and he heads to the back. That was it. So, Hangman Page, he's living life. He has a drinking problem. But hey, as long as he comes to work, he's a functional alcoholic. People have said the same thing about Chris Jericho. It's kind of an open secret. Guy's probably a functional alcoholic. He's probably got empty bottles of Grey Goose and the bubbly laying around his mansion. He's a functional alcoholic. He can drink all he wants. He still goes to work and gets the job done. That's all that matters. Shout out to everybody in the chat. What's going on, guys? Hopefully everybody's having a grand old night. NK, thank you for the super chat. He just wanted to let me know that on the WWE web show The Bump, Drew McIntyre and Bubba Ray gave separate interviews here tonight. He says, CubeBot had a threesome with the Butcher and the Blade. Now, don't you dare soil the good name of CubeBot. I'm not going to stand for that. In fact, I have a surprise for you. Not tonight. You're going to have to wait a few weeks. But I've got some exciting news where CubeBot is concerned. Jacob Donnelly, thank you for the super chat, $5. And Ryan W, arrive, super chat, leave. That's the best way to go. We had Nyla Rose against Big Swole. And yeah, I noticed some of the lagging there. Hopefully now it's not lagging as much for some of you. It lags from time to time for a few seconds. It'll resolve. Don't worry. It'll be fine. Nyla Rose against Big Swole. Here's my thought on this. Big Swole is good. I've seen Big Swole before. I've seen her on AEW Dark. I mean, she was in the Mae Young Classic as well, I believe. Big Swole is good. I think she's got a big upside in her future, but she's got to tighten her shit up on her offense. This did not look great. Now, a lot of this match happened during one of the commercial breaks. When they came back, Swole locked in a guillotine, hit a springboard cutter for a near fall. Swole hit a flatliner off the ropes. Nyla caught her with a spear, and one with the sit-out powerbomb that she calls the Beast Bomb. By the way, I would be remiss if I didn't give a shout-out to all of our fine mods in the chat. So what's going on? Oofman Ruiz, CJ LaChapelle, Silver Rules Gaming, anybody you see with a wrench next to their name, give them a nice howdy, because they're working overtime tonight, modding things up in the chat. So thank you. I want to just say thank you to them. So we had Cody. We had Cody with his coach, Arn Anderson, in his corner against super bad Kip Sabian with his much prettier coach in Penelope Ford. As much as I like Arn Anderson, and I respect the hell out of Arn Anderson, I have to say that if you gave me the choice of who I would want to have in my corner for a match, I ain't picking Arn Anderson over Penelope Ford. I'm just saying. So outside the ring at one point early in the match, Cody, he rears back. I think he was going for a punch. He rears back. It looks like he accidentally strikes Penelope Ford. And Ford falls to the ground and sells it as if she's knocked out. Turns out, though, she was just faking it. Poor Kip. Poor Kip doesn't know now if she's faking it or not in the future. But Jim Ross called her a Jezebel. I couldn't help but laugh. Who even uses that word anymore? He's calling her a Jezebel like it's 1998 all over again. Later on, there's a snap slam by Cody. Disaster kick. Penelope distracts the referee. Arn Anderson is beside himself. He is furious over this. And he gets into the ring and he's arguing with the referee. I think it was Bryce Remsburg. And inexplicably, Arn Anderson decides to bump chests with the referee. He makes physical contact with the referee, which of course leads to the referee ejecting him from the match. I was very disappointed that Arn did not pull a Bobby Valentine when Bobby was on the Mets 20 years ago and reemerge with a fake mustache and sunglasses, which Bobby Valentine did in fact want to do. Because in baseball, when you are ejected, you are not allowed to come back out And in fact, Bobby V put a disguise on and popped his head out of the dugout to watch the game that he had already been ejected from. And so I was very disappointed that Arn did not do the same. He could have put on his Ern Anderson disguise. How many of you ever saw that photo? Ern Anderson? This was like probably 6, 7 years ago now. I think it was something CM Punk tweeted at the time. It was in the back. You know, Arn Anderson, of course, was always a backstage agent in WWE. And this was during the period where Punk was feuding with The Undertaker. And Punk had stolen the urn. This is after Paul Bearer, I think, had died. And I'm trying to remember how this photo was set up. I think Arn was holding the urn. And there was like a fake mustache on it or something just ridiculous. And the caption just said, Ern Anderson. And it was the corniest, stupidest thing that made me laugh. He could have come out here dressed up as Ern Anderson. I would have laughed again. So Penelope hits a Rana on Cody behind the ref's back. So Sabian hits a tope out onto Cody. Goes to kiss Penelope Ford when Joey Janela appears. Now, he was sitting in the front row in a disguise of his own. And as the two of them are about to come together for a nice wet kiss, Penelope and Kip, not Kip and Janela. That's a different show. As they're about to come together to kiss, Joey just sort of stands up between them, and so he gets kissed on both cheeks. Joey flips him off. Doesn't attack or anything. He just kind of flips him off, and then we never see him again. In the meantime, Cody comes out of the ring with a suicide dive of his own. Or I should do it the way Excalibur. Tope suicida! I'm sorry. My Excalibur sounds like Josh Matthews. I need some more fiber in my diet. So he does the tope suicida. He loves saying that. Excalibur loves saying tope suicida. This went another couple of minutes. Finally, Cody finishes Sabian off with not one, not two, but three crossroads. There was a lot of bullshit going on here in this match. And I will say this. If Arn Anderson was my coach, I would fire him. I would relieve him of his duties. I'm not even sure why Cody. And I said this at the beginning. Why is Cody, of all the people on this roster, when you look at win-loss records, why would Cody need a coach? He's got one of the better win-loss records, I think, in the entire company. How many matches has he lost? One? Maybe two. I think he's only lost one. Of all the people who need a head coach, Cody is not the person I would have thought of. Cody is one of the better promos. It's not like he needs a mouthpiece. This just feels very, I don't know. I don't see this pairing being long for this world. But anyway, I was not a huge fan of this segment, but anytime we get to see the lovely Penelope Ford is okay with me. So then we have Britt Baker. Britt Baker DMD. Now maybe somebody in the chat can tell me what the difference is between DMD and DDS. I just remember Isaac Yankem. He was DDS. Britt Baker is DMD. I don't know what that stands for. I don't know what the difference is between the two. Maybe somebody, maybe we have a dentist here in the chat. You know, I have to say this here. I had one person on my Dynamite review from the ship last week. I did my whole review of the Chris Jericho cruise. It's up on the channel. The video just went up yesterday. 37 minutes. If you want to know the ins and outs of the Jericho cruise, you can go back and watch that video. But I talked about Britt Baker from last week. And how I thought her match was no good. Her promo was no good. She's just no good. No good. And I made a comment. I said, look, her turning heel is actually the perfect move because she never should have been a babyface to begin with. Nobody likes the dentist. Right? Everyone's afraid of the dentist. Nobody likes going to the dentist. Why is she a babyface? I have one guy in the chat. This popped me when I saw his comment. He quoted what I said and he said, you're just an anti-dentite. I said, you're right. I'm a rabid anti-dentite. So now Britt Baker is finally in the heel role that she should have been in from day one. She comes out here, and she comes out on stage for an interview with Tony Schiavone. Now, if you remember last week on the ship, she referred to Tony Schiavone as a shitty barista from Starbucks. Tony did become a barista from Starbucks, or at Starbucks, several years ago. Legitimately, in case you didn't know. That's a shoot. So she was still ragging on him for that, and you know, she was running down Tony again, and then she started to run down Jim Ross. She turned and looked over at JR over at the announce desk, and she said, "Hey, you know, hey JR, you cut me off last week. Don't ever cut me off when I'm in the middle of a promo." And she says, "You know, all you ever do on commentary every week, all you ever do is mention that I'm a dentist over and over again, and you run down the new generation. Meanwhile, you collect a nice big fat paycheck." She says, "Be the legend that we all grew up on, not a barbecue shilling slob, getting names wrong, collecting a fat check." She runs down Riho. She tells Tony, she diagnosed Tony Schiavone with gingivitis and told him to pick up a toothbrush. And then she said, "All you fans in Cleveland here, you now finally have a baker that you can trust in." A Baker Mayfield burn by Britt Baker. Cheap heat, for sure. Kicking the Cleveland Browns, although I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought that was a great line. People didn't like that. That was the best line of her whole promo. She seemed very proud of herself as she walked off. So points to whoever's idea that was. Whoever came up with that line deserves a bonus. But heel Britt Baker is much better. It's just a much better role for her to be in. She got good heat from the audience even before the Browns crack at the end of the promo. And I thought the promo itself was actually a lot better than it was the week before on the boat. Now she just has to start having good matches on TV because she has not had very many of them. You know, she's been part of some really good multi-person matches. There was a four-way many, many weeks ago. I remember being maybe one of the best women's matches that we've seen yet on Dynamite. I think it was Baker, Riho, I want to say Statlander, Hikaru Shida maybe. I don't remember everybody who was in it, but it was a very good match. But in terms of one-on-one, I have yet to see one that has impressed me. So that's the only thing she has to work on, but I thought the promo was very good. So then Jim Ross, he throws it to Lexi, yet another new backstage interviewer for AEW. And yet we still have not seen them use Chris Van Vliet since week one. They used him one time on television, and we never saw him again. I guess his boobs aren't big enough. So she's in the back interviewing the Bucks and Kenny Omega. All of a sudden, Hangman Page walks up. He's got a new drink. He went back for round two. He's got a drink in hand. He's got his new tag team championship belt. And he's so excited to show them, "Hey, I just got my nameplate on the belt. Just got my nameplate added." And he's showing it off to the Bucks. And he says, "You know, when they make these nameplates, they make them all at once." So he hands Matt and Nick Jackson the nameplates that they would have on the belts if they were the tag team champ, just to rub it in a little bit more. Again, a subtle, not so subtle, I would say, dig at his boys there. And Omega is just trying to get him to go away. No, he doesn't mean anything by it. Anyway, next week it's the Bucks, it's Hangman Page and Kenny Omega, the Elite, all back together, 4 against 4, taking on the Butcher, the Blade, and the Lucha Bros. Pentagon and Phoenix, who we have not seen on television in a few weeks now. Also next week, Cody is going to get his 10 lashes from MJF, and Jon Moxley will take on Ortiz of the Inner Circle. Brian, thank you for the $5 super chat. And the game DX15 says, "Britt Baker makes me want to turn the channel." Well, let's give her a shot here. She just turned. She's going to portray a different character now. Maybe she'll be a little more tolerable. I know wrestling fans don't have a lot of patience. I don't have a lot of patience. She has a lot of patience because she's a doctor. Get it? She has patience. Yeah, that's terrible. That was awful. That's dad humor, and I don't even have a kid that I know of. Anyway, let me... Let's just move things along. This is what happens when I go live. I never know what's going to come out of my mouth here. It's very dangerous. Frankie Kazarian and Scorpio Sky of SCU against Jack Evans and Angelico. All three members of SCU came out donning Laker jerseys. in honor of Kobe Bryant, which I thought was a very nice move on their part. Evans hit a slingshot, double stomp to Kazarian. Late in the match, Evans missed a space-flying tiger drop outside the ring. Kazarian and Scorpio Sky for the finish hit SCU later on Angelico for the win. I thought this was pretty sloppy in parts. Not a great match, but I hate how Evans and Angelico have just been booked like job guys from the day they debuted. I don't get it. I assume they're signed. I assume they're not freelancers, right? They must be signed, I assume, to an AEW contract. And they're really good. I mean, I became familiar with Angelico from Lucha Underground. Jack Evans I knew going back to Ring of Honor in the mid-2000s. In fact, the very first Ring of Honor show I ever went to in, I want to say it was June of 2006. Jack Evans was, I believe he was in the opening match on that show. He was doing crazy shit back then. But Angelico I became familiar with in Lucha Underground. Remember the crazy dive he did from the balcony? The trio was him and Son of Havoc and Ivelisse. I love the work that he was doing there. I figure, oh, they're going to put these two together. You know, Jack Evans is always very entertaining. All the trash talking he does during his matches. And these guys are like, I don't know who to compare them to. I would almost compare them to like Hawkins and Ryder. You know, only they can actually be entertaining now in the ring. I don't know. It's just very weird to see the way that they have been used on television. It's very disappointing. I don't get it. So, SCU wins. We see the Dark Order up on screen. Evil Uno is calling out Christopher Daniels. He says that the Exalted One, their leader, their higher power, is not happy with him. And I guess the Exalted One has given them the order to go after Daniels' friends, to go after his family. And I'm watching this, and it just hits me. And I thought this might be a possibility. I said this a few weeks ago, even though my prediction for the year is that Matt Hardy would be ultimately revealed as the Exalted One, Broken Matt, and I still hope that's the case. And even if Matt Hardy is not going to AEW to lead the Dark Order, he needs to get the fuck out of WWE. That much I know. I don't care where he goes. You know, he's not getting any younger. Whatever good years he has left, clearly they're not going to be spent in WWE. He needs to get the hell out of there and go somewhere else, where he can put his creativity to good use. But I'm watching this, though, and it hits me. These SOBs are going to make Daniels the Exalted One. Daniels himself is probably going to be revealed as the Exalted One, which would be disappointing. But, I mean, look at what he's been doing. He's the third wheel in SCU. He doesn't really do much. Scorpio and Kazarian are the ones who really wrestle when SCU has their tag team matches. I could see that being the big swerve here. They want you to think that this guy, whoever it is out for Daniels, and in the end we find out it was Daniels all along, and he goes heel and he becomes the leader of the Dark Order. You know, there's been a lot of rumors about who it is. Matt Hardy, Luke Harper, Raven. I've seen Raven's. I'm not sure where that's coming from, by the way, if that was reported anywhere, or if that's just something people are speculating about. Last time I saw Raven, he wasn't looking like the Raven of old. But, you know, Raven's a smart guy. If he's in a role like that where he's cutting promos, I suppose, maybe that wouldn't be so bad. Raven would not be my choice. So I don't know who it's going to be. But watching this, it struck me that it may just be all one big swerve. So they threw it to a video package, a pack promo. A well-put-together promo here. He was not very happy about last week. He wasn't happy about having to wrestle on a moving vessel when he lost to Jon Moxley in the number one contenders match. And he tells Kenny Omega that next week he's coming for blood, whatever that means. He's coming for Kenny next week. And then we had the main event. It was Chris Jericho, Santana, and Ortiz of the Inner Circle against Darby Allin and Private Party. We just give a shout to Brian for the super chat and Tabby Cat 9 Productions with the $5 super chat. Says, love our conversation on the cruise about mental illness and wrestling. Hope to see you next year. Yeah, I met a lot of cool people on the cruise. I talked about this in my cruise recap video, all the people I had a chance to meet, listeners of the show and the live streams. So shout out to Tabby. I enjoyed our conversation, all the conversations that I had on the Jericho cruise. So the fans are singing the tail end of Jericho's theme song again, as they did on the boat last week. When they cut the music off, they keep singing the chorus of the song. So that may be a new thing now going forward. If it is, I'm okay with that because it's a great song. Aubrey Edwards even got a chant. And it's funny, you know, I was watching the part of the Mae Young Classic. This is going back probably, year and a half now maybe. But I was watching it the other day because I still had the video saved for whatever reason. I think I had saved it because of the Tegan Knox injury at the time. But I was watching the match where Tegan Knox hurt her knee. She had just come back from a torn ACL. She had the knee brace on, her first match back. It's a Mae Young Classic match. She was reportedly pegged to win the entire tournament. And so she's wrestling Rhea Ripley. And I'm watching this, and I had forgotten that Aubrey Edwards was the referee for that match at Full Sail. I had forgotten that she spent some time in WWE. I don't think it was a lot of time, but she had spent some time down at the, the Performance Center before signing with AEW. So I just thought that was a little strange. I had no recollection of this. And then, boom, there's Aubrey Edwards. And they even acknowledged her on TV as, you know, referee Aubrey Edwards. So that was kind of strange. And by the way, that video is it's really heartbreaking. I mean, it's cool to see Tegan back now, and she's back in action, and she's, you know, got the double knee braces, but she's doing well, and you kind of wince every time she does a big move because her knee has exploded now two different times, so hopefully she can stay healthy. But I watched that back, and that was just, that was devastating to watch. And you have never heard Full Sail so quiet in your life. You could literally hear a pin drop. I mean, you could hear the air conditioner vents. When she collapsed to the mat, they rang the bell. The doctors huddled over her. She's crying. And then and I know it's not a big building, but the building just goes silent. She's saying, not again, not again. You know, it's been a while since I went back and watched that, but that was just devastating to go back and watch. So the best part of this here, I thought, was Chris Jericho rocking a Puerto Rican flag bandana for the match around his neck. Santana's wearing one, Ortiz is wearing one, and that makes sense. But then there's Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho, born in Manhasset, New York, spending his younger years in Winnipeg, Manitoba, here rocking a Puerto Rican flag bandana around his neck. I love it. Jim Ross, during the course of this match, called Isaiah Cassidy of Private Party Kennedy. And he did so more than once. Without realizing it, nobody corrected him. So, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do? Look, I make mistakes when I review these shows too. So far be it from me to, you know, knock JR too hard for mixing up names. But this is becoming a regular occurrence now. I mean, literally, on this show, a few segments before the main event, they had heel Britt Baker literally talking about Jim Ross fucking up people's names, or at least fucking up the name of the company. And then here he's calling Isaiah Cassidy Kennedy. So I guess he's Kennedy for the match. Britt Baker was right. JR's got to get his shit together. Darby Allin got a hot tag midway through. Darby Allin is great. Darby Allin is, I know he's not the biggest guy in the world, but, you know, he goes out there, the people are into him. He's an exciting guy to watch when he's out there. And so he could be one of those big sort of, I say homegrown, I mean, he had a profile on the indies before he came to AEW, but he could sort of be one of those homegrown AEW talents who maybe one day, who knows, maybe one day he'll be the champion. Maybe one day. People are into him. So he hits the coffin drop outside the ring at one point on Jake Hager. Kennedy hits a senton onto Jericho off the top rope, near fall only. And they get up, and Jericho finally finishes him off with the Judas effect for the three. Inner Circle beat down the babyfaces after the match. Sammy Guevara goes outside. He grabs Darby Allin's skateboard and brings it inside. He drives it into Darby's ribs, and they take the skateboard, they press it up against his throat, they drive him down head first, so the skateboard basically bounces up into his throat, now he can't breathe, and Sammy climbs the ropes, he's got the skateboard, he's going to come off the ropes and just smash him with the skateboard, when all of a sudden, Moxley Sting runs out with a black baseball bat, he beats down the heels. This is like Sting beating down the NWO. Only not really. But kind of. Kind of like a cheap version of it. And he chases off the Inner Circle with the baseball bat. And that is how they went off the air. So they're going to have to come up with ways to keep this interesting since they have four more weeks before they get to this pay-per-view. This stuff between Moxley and Jericho. So we'll see. We'll see what they come up with. That's why I was kind of surprised they didn't have him join. Like, really do join the Inner Circle for a few weeks and really milk it for a while. I figured, you know, the idea that I had pitched back in December is that when they come back on New Year's and Moxley's going to make his big announcement, he'll announce that, yeah, I'll join. And instead of just turning on Jericho 5 minutes later, milk it for a few weeks. You know, because they have a lot of time between that from then to the pay-per-view. They would have 6 weeks or something to fill. And I was kind of surprised they just blew it off in one night. You could have gotten a few entertaining weeks of television out of it. You could have had Moxley trying to create dissension within the ranks, you know, like a poison pill. And he's trying to turn guys in the Inner Circle against each other. Hey, you know, this guy was talking shit about you, man. He thinks he's a bigger star than you. You know, just trying to fuck with them. So they didn't do it. They'll have to come up with some other way to keep things interesting. On the whole, I thought it was a decent show, not their strongest show, not the most exciting show, but, you know, on the whole, it was fine. I didn't really think there was anything terribly wrong, and the crowd in Cleveland seemed pretty up for everything tonight, so I would give it a thumbs up on the whole. Let's see what you guys think. What did you guys think of the show tonight? Let's take a look at the Twitter poll as it stands right now. And, well, there it is. Overwhelmingly positive. 75% thumbs up. Maybe I was too harsh, but that's what I thought about it. 75% thumbs up, 25% thumbs down, with 863 votes in thus far. And the NXT poll has about 568 votes. The exact same score. Here's the AEW one. 75 to 25. NXT, 75 to 25. Well, there you go. It doesn't get much closer than that. We got a dead heat so far. I'd be very interested to see if it stays that way into the morning. Remember when the two shows tied in the ratings a few weeks ago? I still can't believe that happened, by the way. I cannot believe that that happened. They tied in the ratings, and so far here, they're tied in the Twitter poll. So, again, if you want to vote, if you haven't already done so, at Solomonster on Twitter is the place to go for that. Now, I had mentioned before, I talked about the Royal Rumble pool. We had a lot of people who participated in the poll and wanted to take part. We had a whole bunch of winners, which is really just for bragging rights, but then we take all those winners and we dump them into a pool, and from that we choose a third place winner, a second place winner, and a first place winner. And there are some little prizes involved here. I probably should have had them listed in front of me. Of course, I don't. Because why should I? Why should I have them in front of me? That would just make things too easy. So let me open that here. Let me open that so that these people know exactly what they're getting here. And I figure it'd be just kind of fun to do it live on the air. I mean, I could do it on my own and just report back, but why, you know, where's the fun in that? So we're going to pick some winners here on the air. Let me put this wheel. This is the wheel that we're going to use to choose the winners. There you see it. The 2020 Ultimate Royal Rumble Pool. I'm going to spin this wheel. What we'll do is we'll pick a third place. We'll work backwards. So we'll pick a third place winner first, and that person, by the way, all the winners here, you can, if you need to reach out to me to get to the other person, that's fine. I'm not the one who's arranging all of the prizes and shipping them out or anything, so I can put you in touch with Zach. I can put you in touch with Julian. But that is not being handled by me, just FYI, so everybody is aware of that. And let me just get this all set up here. I want to make sure you guys can hear this wheel when it spins, so I just have to make one little change here. Hopefully you guys will be able to hear. I'm going to be very upset if you guys can't hear this when I go to do it. So you should hear a wheel spinning, and then you'll hear the little sound effect there when we pick the winner. Let me just change things up here a little bit. Just give me 1 second. Just checking the chat. We got a lot of activity in the chat. Wheel of Solomonster says Mecha Boo, or Mecha, Mecha Boo. CJ LaChapelle, one of our moderators. Again, thank you to him for all of his help. Squisher King. What's going on, Squisher? What is going on, Squisher? Okay, so this... Hopefully this will do the trick. All right. Let's hope. Let us hope. All right. So, this first spin is for the third place winner. And what the third place winner will receive is a hardcover version of The Adventure of Hardy the Horse from Amazon. Of course, that's my mother's children's book. So to the person who offered to buy a copy and ship it off, I say thank you to that person. That was very kind of them to do. And tickets to Pro Wrestling Magic Show, February 22nd in Ridgefield Park, New Jersey. So if this person who wins is not from the New York, New Jersey area, I don't know that these tickets are going to do them any good. And so I guess they won't be getting the tickets, but what the hell. That's a nice offer from Pro Wrestling Magic. Whether this person can actually go to the show or not remains to be seen. But let's spin this wheel here and choose our third place winner. So here we go. Let's spin this bad boy here. Here we go. Spin, spin, spin. I'm going to spin this a whole bunch of times. We've got so many slices on the wheel you can't even see the names. That's how many names are on here. All right, here we go. Here we go. CJ Gill. Congratulations to CJ Gill. I don't know if CJ's listening right now, but CJ is the third place winner in the Ultimate Royal Rumble pool. So again, if CJ has any questions about anything, you can reach out to me, but I think it's going to be Zach and possibly Julian handling things there. So if you know them in the group, you could reach out to them directly. And now we move on to the second place winner. And the second place winner is going to be receive any Solomonster shirt of their choosing from our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. And 2 general admission tickets to the Pro Wrestling Magic Show in New Jersey on February 22nd. So let's spin this wheel again and see who our second place winner is in the Royal Rumble pool. I love this. I feel like fucking Pat Sajak here. All right, here we go. Here we go. And the winner is Jorge Santander Martinez. Boy, it's a long one. Good old JSM. Congratulations, you are the second place winner in the Royal Rumble pool. Again, Jorge Santander Martinez. Feel free to reach out to Zach Holker directly or Julian Cannon in the Facebook group, and they will get you what you need. You are the second place winner in the pool. And now it all comes down to this. We pick the ultimate Royal Rumble pool winner. The first place winner will receive, just FYI, a $50 gift card and one shirt of their choosing from any store on ProWrestlingTees.com, plus 2 front row tickets to the aforementioned Pro Wrestling Magic Show in New Jersey on February 22nd. So here we go. It all comes down to this. Let's choose a first place winner. Spin, spin, spin. This will be our last winner here until 2021. Here we go. And the winner is... Michael Snyder! Congratulations! Michael Snyder is the first place Ultimate Royal Rumble Pool winner. You get the $50 gift card, the shirt from Pro Wrestling Tees, the tickets to Pro Wrestling Magic. I hope to God you live in New Jersey or New York, but if not, that's okay. Whew. Michael Snyder, boy, this thing has been in the making for weeks now. 2,500 plus people participated in this pool. And Michael Snyder, you are the ultimate Royal Rumble pool survivor for 2020. So congratulations to him and all the winners, even if just for bragging rights. It's always fun. I'm in the pool. Of course, I can't win any prizes, but I participate anyway. It's always a good time to participate in the Royal Rumble pool. And actually, we have somebody in the chat who says he won. I don't know if he is one of the winners or if he's just pretending that he won. But in any event, congratulations to you too. I don't know if you're the actual winner, but what the hell. Let's take a few calls. We have time for a few of them here. We have somebody in Garden City at area code 516. My old area code from my college days. What's going on? Who am I talking to?
I'm talking to Sean from Long Island.
Hey, Sean, Long Island, my old stomping grounds for about 4 years, many years ago.
First of all, you know, I just want to say, you know, I love the show, listen every week.
Thank you.
And, you know, I agree with you. Like, you know, the show was, it wasn't bad. It was all right, you know, like, but one thing that always kind of, like, irks me, it's like, and I love Cody, but, like, I feel like his entrance is just so, like, over the top and extra, like, he the stage opens up for him. He gets, like, half the budget's worth of power. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's, like, a little, like, I don't know, like, overkill, I guess you can say.
Well, he's one of their biggest stars, though.
Yeah, he's one of the biggest stars, but, like, no one else gets the kind of treatment he does. Like, I don't know.
Because he's one of the biggest stars. It's like when Roman Reigns comes out on SmackDown, and he does the fist bump onto that pad, and then he gets all the pyro. Well, the reason he gets that is because he's Roman Reigns. So in a way, Cody, I mean, some people may not like this comparison, but in a way, Cody is kind of like the Roman Reigns of AEW, only not as big.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
What's your question? Or do you have one? Hello? Well, I guess we lost him. I guess he had no question. All right, well, there you go. But Cody is, if he's not the biggest, he's one of the biggest stars in the company, so it makes sense that he would get the royal treatment. I don't really mind it. I actually think, his entrance is a big entrance. He always gets a huge reaction. You know, I like the theme song. It's a real song. It's not like it was custom made for him or anything. So I like it. I don't have any issue with it. Let's go to Miami, area code 305. You are just in Miami last week, as a matter of fact.
Hi, Solo Monster. I honestly enjoy your show. I specifically watched your show because honestly, I can't read articles on wrestling because of my ADD. I lose a ton of focus, so I can't. I listen to your show, so it's easier for me to hear audio and stuff like that. And my question is, what is your prediction for the first person to turn on Chris Jericho in the Inner Circle and maybe join Jon Moxley in the future if he makes a stable?
I don't see anybody turning on him anytime in the near future. I think if there's any kind of split, it probably would be Hager. And I think it would be a case where, and who knows, maybe we see this at the Revolution pay-per-view. You know, it could be a case where Jericho loses the championship, and I think he probably will. I mean, my early prediction is that Moxley's going to win the title from him next month. I could see, you know, a situation where Jericho kind of goes off on Hager, and, you know, maybe his interference backfired, or you know, Jericho blames him for the loss. You know, where were you? I needed you. And he starts pushing him around. And, you know, Hager's not going to take shit from him. It ends up turning him babyface. I think that's still way in the future, though. I think it would be premature to do something like that next month. Otherwise, you know, I don't see anybody else turning on Jericho. And as far as Moxley goes, Moxley doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who would form his own stable. I don't see him, you know, forming a stable. I don't see that happening. He seems like a loner. Guy comes out of the crowd by himself. He leaves through the crowd by himself. He doesn't strike me as a leader. You know, he's not the kind of guy that needs to surround himself with a whole bunch of people. So, Yeah, I don't see that happening. Let's go to Jersey City, area code 201.
Hey, Solomon, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. Just got back eating dinner with my brother and a friend. Had a chance to see the show. I'm with you as well with the show being all right. I definitely was really happy seeing Jericho wearing the Puerto Rican flag. As a Puerto Rican myself, I thought that was really cool. My question is in regards to comments that Vampiro talked about in regards to AEW, so bear with me. Chris Van Vliet had an interview with him the same week as he did the Dave Benoit interview, and where he talked about Lucha Underground kind of being the catalyst to AEW, per se, because at the time, Lucha Underground, which I thought was also a fantastic product as well, was kind of like a real first alternative to what we saw at the time with WWE, with NXT, and New Japan, or at least stuff within the United States. And he also talked a little bit about how unofficially but officially, unfortunately, Lucha Underground is not going to happen because pretty much everyone's gone, money, all the other stuff. So I was wondering whether you feel you agree with that sentiment where Lucha Underground was the catalyst to what we're seeing now with an AEW or more alternative stuff such as maybe NWA Power, which is a little bit different, but and then more focused on the independent circuits now that we're getting more focused. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who were in Lucha Underground who are now in AEW. And my, just speaking personally, I would not have had the exposure to people like Rey Fénix or Pentagon or Angelico were it not for the time that they spent in Lucha Underground. Brian Cage, there's rumors, I mean, he's having surgery on his biceps. He's going to be out for a while. But there's rumors that when he comes back, he could be AEW bound. He's another one. Brian Cage had been around for a while. I mean, he had been in WWE developmental many years ago and looked a hell of a lot smaller than he looks now. He's
Oh
like a
yeah, definitely.
he's like a totally different person now. But I wasn't really familiar with him until I saw him as, the machine, Cage, in Lucha Underground. So for me personally, and I have to assume I'm not the only one, my exposure to a lot of these guys came through Lucha Underground, and now we see a lot of those same talents in AEW. So I think that's a fair statement for him to make. I just assumed that Lucha Underground was dead. I didn't need Vampiro to tell me that because how long has it been since the last season? And then they've pretty much lost all of their talents. So even if they came back, it would almost be a total reboot because Pentagon's gone. Phoenix is gone, Cage is gone, Johnny Mundo is gone, Ricochet is gone. All the key talents are gone. So I'm not even sure what that show would look like if they wanted to bring it back. It would be a totally new cast. So, him saying that the show is pretty much dead, I think is something that we've known now for a long time.
No, I agree with you completely. And just on one comment, I really hope AEW do something in the future with someone like Angelico because I still see that dive he did in Lucha Underground season one. I just keep thinking, dude, that just made him a star just by that one dive alone. And I know he's teaming with Jack Evans and they have history, but I hope in the future they do something with him because he could be something special if he, not to do crazy risks like that again, but after seeing that, there's something to him that I became a fan of because of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. It was one of the most spectacular spots I've ever seen in my life was that balcony dive. It was incredible to watch.
And then he did another one with a drop kick, and then he did one off to literally the stage. And I'm like, this guy's gonna kill himself. I'm so scared.
Yeah. Well, again, it's what makes it frustrating that they really aren't doing anything with him. He's just sort of a warm body to put in the ring in AEW. But hopefully, at some point, because even the Bucks, it feels like we saw the Bucks tonight against the Butcher and the Blade. And I was watching this thinking, boy, they must be running out of opponents for these guys. We've seen the Bucks with SCU. We've seen the Bucks with the Lucha Bros. We're going to see them, I'm sure, soon with Kenny and Hangman. And then after that, it's like, well, who do you put them with? So you've got these two guys who are really good. Why not build them up as a formidable team? And maybe at some point they could get into a program with the Young Bucks. I think those matches could be insane.
Absolutely, and I agree, and I'm hoping that's the case because I got the tickets to see them in Newark in March, so I'm hoping we see more of that, at least fingers crossed, so I'm looking forward to that show.
Absolutely. Anything else before I let you go?
No. Thank you. Keep doing what you're doing, man. And I appreciate everything you do.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So that was from 201. Yeah, he mentioned the Newark show. And to their credit, because we've seen some small AEW crowds in recent weeks, you know, they've gone to some of these cities in the middle of the country. We have reports of you know, empty sections. And they had a few shows where they only had 3,000 people in the building that fits 10,000 or 12,000. To their credit, they sold over 10,000 tickets on day one last week when tickets went on sale for that Newark, New Jersey show on March, I think it's 25th, I believe. I believe they wanted to get into the Garden. And Cody has sort of hasn't outright said anything, but there have been times where he's tweeted out these kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not dark, but sort of... Oh, I don't know. I have the word on the tip of my tongue, but these sort of tweets that allude that he's frustrated about something, but you know, he doesn't actually say what it is. And there was something like that a few weeks ago. And the reports are that they wanted to run Madison Square Garden, you know, possibly on that date. And they got shut out because, you know, look, that's WWE territory. And I'm not even saying that WWE got them blocked for that show. That was probably an MSG call, because MSG saw how poorly AAA did when AAA tried to run a show there last year, and they had to move the show out of the Garden into the theater next door that fit 5,000 people, and I think they filled it up pretty good. But they've pretty much, I think, made their mind up that if they're going to do wrestling, they're going to do wrestling with WWE. So unfortunately, it doesn't look like we'll be seeing AEW in MSG anytime soon. I won't say that they would sell out Madison Square Garden. Yeah, that's a building after the setup, probably you figure they'd fit 16,000-17,000 people maybe, max in the building. I figure they probably would get probably 13. I think they could fill most of the Garden up. I don't know that they could sell it out though. But it's New York, you know, it's probably the hottest wrestling market in the country, so who knows? If there was ever a market where they would sell out a big building like that, it probably... If not Chicago, then it would probably be New York. Let's go to... Speaking of Chicago, funny enough, we have a call from area code 773. You're on the air.
This is Boris from Chicago.
Hey, what's going on?
What's going on, so? My first question is, we'll just continue with the stadiums. Is there something that WWE's doing where they possibly can't use the United Center? Because I noticed they're doing shows around Chicago, but I'm wondering, is it too early for them to try to use United Center, or is something down the line, or is it something with WWE? Because they did do one SmackDown recently back in United Center. That's my first question.
Did they? Because I was under the impression that WWE hasn't run the United Center in years. Did they run a show there recently?
I think they did the Christmas one, more like a Christmas Eve SmackDown.
Are you sure that was the United Center and not the Allstate Arena?
I believe it was the United Center because I too thought they had screwed up.
I got to check on this. Hold on.
Because I used to go to when they was first starting there, and then something happened with them in the United Center, so I don't know. But I did see SmackDown advertised for the United Center.
Yeah, you're right. So what I'm looking at here is it was a holiday tour show after Christmas, not last year, but the year before. It says right. That they were live at the United Center. All right, well, that's the first instance I remember of them being at the United Center since maybe the first show they ever did there, which was SummerSlam in like 1994. I mean, I don't think they've done Yeah,
I was there.
Yeah, and okay, so you know then that might have been the first event of any kind at the United Center.
Yeah, and then after that, something happened, and there was no more WWE in the United Center.
Yeah,
so I was just wondering, would the AEW be able to go there?
Well, I mean, if WWE can't go there for some reason, well, you know what? I'm going to assume that the reason WWE does not, and I don't know this, but I'm going to assume that the reason they don't run that building more often is because they probably have some kind of a deal with the Allstate Arena. So if AEW does not have a deal like that, I guess technically they could. I can't see them. I mean, that's probably a building that fits, what, 20,000 people? Maybe 22 or something along those lines. I think it's still a little ambitious at this point for them. You know, they go to the Sears Center, which is in, what is it, Hoffman Estates, Illinois, I think, technically. I mean, they say Chicago. It's not really Chicago.
Right.
But they go to that building, and they fill it up. They've sold that building out a couple times now, and that's about 10 or 11,000 people. I think the United Center is still probably a little bit of a stretch, but at some point, sure, why not? It's not like WWE has any kind of... clearly, they don't have any kind of a deal with that building, so why not?
Okay. Now, I have another question. The second screen experience has been getting better. You know, Sammy Guevara used the little signs and stuff, but I noticed tonight that MJF went around the ring. It seemed like he knew that he was on that second screen. You know, the commercial and the second screen. Is there a way to know that you were on the second screen? You know, far as, because it seemed like he just worked right with that screen. I wanted to do something else while that happened, you know, but it seemed like they've been actually working with that second screen. And it so far for me, it's been keeping me actually glued to it, because it seemed like people know, the wrestlers are knowing that they on that second screen. And is there a way to tell that you're on that second screen during a commercial?
I assume that they're just told by people at ringside. They are fed cues by whether it's the camera person or the referee or somebody else at ringside. So yeah, they know in some way, or they're told in advance, you know, when they're going to be, you know, going to break. So yeah, they know, they clue them in as to all that stuff. How they do it, probably through the referee or somebody at ringside.
My third question, I know that this is a, you know, torch thing, but, you know, three questions. Now, the third one is, I know for me, this is the first time that I've been seeing a wrestling from the ground up. And I don't have any expectations of AEW because I've never experienced AWA, NWA, any of these shows when they're originally was created, you know what I'm saying? I'm not that old. You know, so do you think people, due to the fact that we have existing wrestlers, put a lot on AEW because they never experienced a wrestler from the ground up, you know, versus somebody that was there for the old era like AWA and the classics that we know of?
I think people who have been wrestling fans for a long time, you know, and I'll count myself among them. There's people who have been watching longer than me, but I mean, I've been watching over 30 years. And so I think people who have been watching a long time are tougher on the product, and not just AEW, but WWE as well. They're tougher on the product because they've been exposed to it for so long. And they have these memories when they were younger, when they were a kid, or they were in their teenage years. Oh, it was so great back then. It was great because of this and that. And now it's not as good. So I think they're generally harder on the product now, as opposed to somebody who maybe has never watched wrestling before. You know, they're flipping around and they see the Butcher and the Blade, and they're like, what the fuck is this? And so they're going to tune in to see what this kind of wackiness is all about. And to them, maybe they just don't take it as seriously. So, yeah, I think there's something to be said for long-term fans being a little more, you know, they have higher expectations because they want it to be more in line with what they used to see. And when it's not, I think they get very upset about that.
Okay.
So you got three questions. That doesn't happen very often, but at least there were three good questions though, I will say.
Are you going back to the torch soon? And that's the fourth. I know I broke the rule.
Oh, with Wade?
Wait, yes.
Yeah, generally, I think he usually reaches out to me. We do shows probably every other month, so I would think we could probably do something in the next few weeks. We'll probably link up again for a SmackDown review.
I think this is the coolest crossover, too, because I knew both of you guys separately, but to have you guys connect like this and other shows, you know, with Wade and you guys, I think it's pretty awesome. I wish wrestling was just going to do it too, because, like, you know what I'm saying? Who would it to say that you didn't want to, you know, do Wade's show, you know, vice versa? But if the podcast people can team up, why can't we get this, you know, AWA, New Japan, all these? Why is it we know they're there. But they, it's like, man, I wish it was easy as how you, Wade, and other shows, you know, crossover like this. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's two totally different examples. I mean, look, it's cool for me because, yeah, I respect Wade's work. Look, he's been around the second longest of all those guys. Meltzer's been around since the early 80s. But, you know, Wade's had the torch since 1987. You know, and he was also like Dave back then. He was having conversations on a regular basis with Vince McMahon and stuff. And he used to have these interviews in the torch from Titan Tower. He would talk to Vince. And so he's been doing this a long time, you know. So when he first reached out to me a couple years ago about coming on to do guest spots on the shows, I said, sure, I think that would be great. We'll see how it goes. Yeah, maybe people don't like it, so we won't do it again. And now we've probably done almost two dozen shows together. So it's pretty cool. He's a good guy.
We win. We win.
There you go.
Fans win.
Well, thank you for the call. You'll have to call in more often when you have any other questions for me, but thanks for calling in.
Will do.
All right, have a good night. So that was our good friend from Chicago, area code 773, calling in. A fine fellow, a fine chap. Want to say thank you to Just a Rican and his comics for Hot Rod Rodney. There you go, for the $5 super chat. A. Lavelle. Also, with some super chatting action, just left the AEW live event in Cleveland. So he was at the show tonight. Says, just left the show in Cleveland. Great main event. Great Orange Cassidy is so over, as are the Elite. Well, I take that as a personal compliment, so I thank you. And Brian, also for the $5 super chat. John Moxley enters the G1 climax. I am predicting a Moxley versus Okada match will happen in 2020. Well, before we get to Moxley and Okada, we've got another big match, which is coming up not this weekend, but next weekend. Next Sunday, February 9th, for those who don't know, or for those who have forgotten, it is the New Beginning in Osaka. And I am very much looking forward to John Moxley's match on that show, because John is going to be defending his IWGP United States Championship on that show against Minoru Suzuki. And this is the match I've been waiting for since Moxley came to New Japan. And we're finally going to get it. Again, not this Sunday, but next Sunday. So I'm definitely going to be watching that. Definitely going to be reviewing that on the podcast. So that should be a good time. And we'll end here with 516. So we're going right back to Long Island. I wonder if this is the same person who called in before. 516, you're on the air.
Hey, Jason, it's Jared. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm glad you finally got my donation tonight.
Yes, it worked. Finally.
Yes, finally. I agree with you. Suzuki versus Moxley. Can't wait next Sunday. Cannot wait for that. I do agree with you that us maybe older fans in our 30s, that, you know, watching for 30 years, are a little, you know, stingy on the product. But, you know, you really pointed it out to me tonight that Chris Daniels is the leader of the voters party. You really made that clear to me. I was thinking while I was watching it, but when you said it, it just makes total sense to me. So.
Yeah, and again, I don't know if that's going to be the case or not, but I'm just watching that, and it's almost...
I mean, who else can it be? I mean, who else can it be?
Well, I mean, it could be... it literally could be anybody.
I don't know if it'd be anybody, but...
But to your point, though, the reason it makes sense is because this is now the probably the second or third show now where they're singling out Chris Daniels. And so I'm looking at this and I'm saying, okay, let's say he's not the leader, right? Where is this going? Why are they singling... Why him? Why are they singling him out if it's not some kind of big swerve where in the end we come to find out that he's leading the charge? So that's, I'm starting to, you know, think it maybe isn't Matt Hardy or anybody like that, but it may end up being Chris Daniels.
But Matt Hardy needs to get his ass out of WWE quickly.
Look, Matt Hardy could come Matt Hardy could come work for fucking House of Glory, and he'll do better than he's doing right now in WWE. We would welcome him back into House of Glory. In fact, I think he and Jeff Hardy were the tag team champions in House of Glory a number of years ago before I started working there as, you know, on the announce team. We would welcome him with open arms. Broken Matt, come back to HOG. You'll have a much better time than you're having right now in WWE. It's ridiculous what they're doing with this guy.
And Jason, just one more point. 2 years ago, last year, before Kenny Omega signed with AEW, you know, this guy was just like, you know, we waited once, twice, three times a year, him to fight Okada, and you know, it was just something special. And now I see him on TV as a character. He needs some acting lessons. I don't know what it is. He just doesn't come across to me as a regular every week TV character, as one of the main elite, one of the main players on this show. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I talked about this a few weeks ago. He does not feel nearly as big of a star as he did a year ago.
He doesn't
ago.
Feel special anymore.
Yeah, no, he doesn't feel special. He doesn't feel as special. I mean, he still gets a big reaction when he comes out. Yeah. It's not like he's getting crickets when he comes out. But when he signed with the company, before they even got TV, he was one of the biggest names in all of wrestling. He was coming off
hottest free agent.
Hottest free agents. And one of the, having just great match after great match. I mean, you have people who don't like him no matter what he does. But then and now, I mean, it's like night and day. And he talked about this recently. He answered it on Twitter. Somebody said, hey, you know, how come they're not using you the way that you should be used? And his answer was, I'm doing now what I want to do to give back. And I heard that and I said, on the one hand, well, that's nice of him to say, but you've got this upstart company that needs as much star power as possible. This is not the time for him to say, hey, I'm going to take a back seat and just put everybody else over. You know, they at some point they have to reestablish, and I think they will. I think he's going to be the one. I think Moxley wins the championship, and then later this year, Omega wins it from him. And so maybe at that point, they'll do a better job. But here's the other thing. Whether he wins the title or not, here's the problem. Mm-hmm. One of the problems is that he's not having the kind of matches in AEW that he had in New Japan. And but that's those long matches, like with Okada, where they're trying to tell a story and he's just these hard-hitting 30-40 minute battles that he was used to having there. Having this weekly television and everything, it's not conducive to having those, but the opponents are not there. The talent that he was working with, all due respect to the AEW roster, the talent that he was in the ring with having those matches with in New Japan, the level of talent is just not the same in AEW. And so I think that's part of the problem also.
And Jason, I think people also forget that the guy just turned 37 or 36. He's not a spring chicken. I mean, you know, Paige and the Bucks, they're in their early 30s. I know Cody's 34, but, I mean, Omega's not a spring chicken. He's been around. I just don't see him having those 20, 30-minute matches on these pay-per-views that he did, you know, in New Japan. And it kind of disappoints me. I mean, I'm not saying that Triple H would have done something better with him, but he's not coming across to me as a star I want. And, you know, and I look at AEW. I wish him nothing but the best. I want to see him succeed. And even from what he did go to NXT, I want to see him succeed there. But he doesn't seem like he needs to learn how to be a character, an every week character on TV, if they're paying him that type of money.
Well, and look, they're telling the story with Hangman. So there is, it's not like there's no story that he's part of right now. Although Hangman is the focus, not really Omega. But that's also part of the problem, though. You know, they have weekly television now. It's not like in New Japan where they're really, I mean, they had television kind of, you know, on access, but you didn't have the weekly television. He would show up every few months or every other month for like a big match, and then you wouldn't really see him, and then you would, and he felt like a bigger deal. And I think now you have to be on TV every week, and you've got to have some kind of storyline. You know, if he had gone to WWE, it would be the same thing, maybe worse. You know, they might have him doing something.
No, he'd be EC3. He'd be EC3.
They're not going to pay him the kind of money they were going to pay him just to job him out like EC3.
I know you're just as upset as me on EC3 as you are.
I wouldn't go that far. But I still think he made the right choice not going there. I just don't think it would have. I think it would have been even worse. I just think Let's see what happens when this story with Hangman plays out. I think he'll probably work his way back into the title picture. Cody is not allowed to wrestle for the championship, so let's say he's on the sidelines there for a while. I think Omega will be the next, after Moxley wins it. I just feel like they might get back to that whole Moxley-Omega thing. And for his sake, I hope they do. In the meantime, in a way, maybe, he looks at it like, hey, I'm giving my body a rest. He beat his body to shit.
Yeah, true.
I mean, look at the matches he had in Japan and probably the injuries that we didn't even know
absolutely.
About.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So in a way, kind of, now I'm not saying he, bums it when he's in the ring, but like in a way, he's also able to give his body a rest. Hopefully in a few months, we'll start to see the Omega of old.
Okay, Jason, just one last question. Now, do you see at the Revolution pay-per-view them dropping the titles or Paige turning on him, and do you see that happening yet, or are they still going to play this out?
I think they could still, it's tough. I think they could drag it out for a little while. The thing is, they only have pay-per-views 4 times a year. So after this next one, I assume the next pay-per-view isn't until the end of May, which would be double or nothing. I would think by then you probably are looking at an Omega Hangman match. So then maybe on TV they do the turn before then, and then they could drop the belts. I don't think they have to drop the belts at Revolution. I assume the match at Revolution is going to be them against the Bucks. It seems like that's the direction it's headed. It just would feel a little too soon, I think, to take the belts off of them. But it's coming. I don't think they're going to wait until May. I think whatever's going to happen is going to happen maybe on TV in March or April, I think, is where the split finally happens. And then the match ultimately is going to be Kenny Omega against Hangman Page.
And Jason, just one more thing, and I'm sorry to keep on asking questions, but you brought up a great point before. Moxley and the Circle, you have 4 more weeks of TV here. What are they going to do in 4 more weeks to entice us to buy this pay-per-view when we already know what's going to happen at the pay-per-view? He should have joined them and then turned. That's just basic storytelling to me. I don't know how you feel about that, but you still got you got the whole month of February here.
Yeah, I said that earlier, and I'm going to let you go, but thank you. I appreciate all of the questions here. There's some good questions. But on that one, it's like what I talked about earlier. I think they really should have gone down that road. It's too bad they didn't. I think they could have gotten some, entertaining weeks of television out of it. And now they're probably just going to go, tit for tat. You'll have Moxley do something to Jericho. Jericho and the Inner Circle will beat Moxley down. They have to be creative with it. Let's see how clever they can be. They don't have a whole creative team behind them. This is not the way AEW wanted to operate. Tony Khan, I guess, has taken more of a hands-on approach lately with creative. Let's see how clever they are. Let's see how creative these people really are. What can they do to keep people invested in this until the 29th of February? It's a month away. Exactly 1 month away from today. We'll see what they do. Anyway, those are some great calls. I appreciate all of the questions. And one last shout out, make sure I didn't miss anybody, to Shane Adam Hughes with the Super Chat. Says, curious to know if you were to book Charlotte, how you would make her more of an interesting character. That's tough because she's just been around now for a while and she's been a face, she's been a heel. She's one of these characters who would benefit from like 6 months away. I said the same thing about Roman Reigns when he was in that mode where he was just, people were sick of him and he was getting booed every week. You're not going to take your top star and just bench him for 6 months, but I feel like that would almost be in his best interest back then. I kind of feel that way about Charlotte. They say absence makes the heart grow fonder. I did not watch NXT yet. I've seen the rumors about her possibly showing up in NXT. I don't know if she did tonight or not. I'm going to watch it when I'm done here. And I was not sold on that idea. If she ends up cashing in against Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania, yes, it's a unique match. It's a huge stage for Rhea to be on, but does that not make you feel a little uncomfortable? I mean, it's kind of like, it's kind of like having somebody, go up against, when he was at his peak mowing people down, Roman Reigns or something. You know, it's like, you know how it's going to end for that person. I don't want to see Rhea Ripley going to WrestleMania and losing to Charlotte Flair. Make no sense anyway, because why would Charlotte win the NXT championship? So I'm a little worried about this, but I will watch NXT and see if anything happened tonight. Charlotte and Bayley is just thumbs down. Just forget that. I mean, there's no interest in that whatsoever. So it's probably either NXT in some effort for her to prove her superiority. Did Rhea pin her on TV? I feel like Rhea may have a pinfall over Charlotte on television back during the build-up to Survivor Series. Or maybe even at Survivor Series. Or am I completely misremembering this? Because if she does, then there's your story. They can weave that into the story of why she would want a match with Rhea Ripley. But falling short of that, it's Charlotte against whoever the Raw champion is. And I just don't have any appetite for Charlotte against Becky again. I just don't. So what would I do with Charlotte Flair? I'd take her off TV for a few months. That's what I would do. You know, you can call up some new faces from NXT, move them to the main roster, and then she can, you know, start working with those people. You know, but it's tough. She's already accomplished everything there is to accomplish. She's like a 9 or 10 time women's champion, WrestleMania headliner, Royal Rumble winner. I mean, what's left? What's left for her to do? Brian, thank you for the $2 super chat. Worst booking idea, Lesnar beats The Fiend. That is a match I don't need to see. I like The Fiend character in all his matches, though not so much. Daniel Bryan got a hell of a match out of him at the Rumble. A Brock Lesnar Fiend match? That sounds like a horrible idea. Thank you guys for all the support tonight, all the super chats. I always appreciate your support. One last flash of the poll here, AEW. 76 up, 24 down. NXT, 75.1. We have decimal points for the NXT poll to 24.9% thumbs down. So a slight lead right now for AEW, but they're pretty evenly matched in the poll this week. I'll be back for episode 637 of The Sound Off this Sunday. The weekly Sunday podcast, RSPW Rewind, will be back. A lot of Royal Rumble fallout. I have a lot of thoughts on the Matt Riddle, Brock Lesnar situation, among other stories to cover. And we'll be back with another Dynamite review here on the YouTube channel next Wednesday, live as soon as AEW goes off the air. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a fantastic week, and I will see you for 637 this weekend. Until then, take care, guys.